Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation and president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, we're joined by someone who spent her career guiding families through one of the most complex dynamics in business, how to grow, lead, and transition across generations together. Sally Durstein is managing partner of Delaware Valley Family Business Center, where she works with privately held and multi-generational companies to strengthen leadership, clarify governance, and build harmony inside and outside the boardroom. For more than 30 years, she's helped families align their business goals with their personal values, often through moments of high stakes and high emotion. Whether it's crafting a succession plan, facilitating family retreats, or coaching next-gen leaders, Sally brings empathy, clarity, and strategy to every conversation. Sally, welcome to Growing Up B2B. It's great to have you.
Thanks. It's great to be here, Ed.
Awesome. Sally, to begin with, how did you first get involved in the world of family business advising, and what drew you into that to begin with?
Ed, I've always felt very blessed. I grew up in a very close family, and that family happened to be a family business. So I was a third generation family member. My father worked there along with his seven of 11 of his brothers and sisters. Wow. He was one of the owners. And I worked there as well, summers and Saturdays through college. And so for me, the business was next door. Our church was across the street. We lived on a family compound because my grandparents were farmers. And then we got into the meat processing business. I could hardly tell the difference between family, business, faith. I loved it. I was always very proud of my family and what we were doing in the community. So I felt very blessed. And when the founder invited me to join him in his practice back then in the 1900s, 32 years ago in 92, he actually had a management consulting firm, then realized that most of the difficult issues were family business. And so family business was just becoming a field then. He invited me in. We got all the training we could and really learning from the current clients in management consulting about the issues. And so we were part of FFI, already had a degree in organizational management. We did a lot around Bowen family systems theory, because it's really important to understand family patterns and anxiety and differentiation. And so from there, it's just been a wonderful journey through to my own transition with, by the way, the founder is still here because I invited him back. Sometimes that works well and sometimes it doesn't. In our case, it does. And we are family. We are second cousins.
So, oh, wow. Okay.
It's such a blessing to work with families because they're just the ones that we work with. They're just so intentional and caring and thoughtful, and they can make a big difference in the world and their communities.
True. Was there a point in time where you had considered staying on with your family's business? Was that a path that you had ever contemplated way back?
No, actually, it wasn't. And actually, our family business did not make it beyond my generation. And I think that's one of the pulls into, for me, one of the reasons I do what I do. I truly believe if we would have had some of the tools, some of the safe spaces that we create, and really the education about the complexity, that we may have made it on to the next generation. However, I'm very proud and pleased that our family has stayed united and together, because often family businesses can blow up the family and or the business.
We've all seen that, unfortunately, and it does happen.
Absolutely.
So that said, you've worked with obviously a wide range of different types of family companies and constructions and organizations. What is the most common misunderstanding that families have when it comes to working together in a business?
Oh, great question. Because misunderstandings are ripe in family business, and it's because there's so much complexity. You really are taking three very different systems, which often families don't understand. You're taking the family system, and by the way, behind me, you'll see one of our key models. It's our five mountain model. So I hope our listeners can see that, at least those that are watching. You take the family system, which I think is the most important. Because the families who want to work with us say, you know what, if this business is going to blow up my family, no thank you, we're going to sell it. What we need to understand is that the family is an emotional system and it's around all the emotions. Families, we think we want them to be together forever, right? We don't want family members to go for us to fray relationships, but business is all about performance. And then ownership, which is the gold mountain over there. That's really, if you want to have an aligned group of owners, or we call them shareholders, because no one can ever own like one dad or grandpa. They're king of everything. But shareholders have to be aligned in their vision, their values, their direction, their risk tolerance, all of that good stuff. So I think the main misunderstanding is not understanding that it's naturally complex. Sometimes families think they're dysfunctional. And then, so when we tell them all this, it's, oh my gosh, I just thought we should be able to do this. We're family. We love each other. So we spend a lot of time, Ed, in around education. And that's where our model comes in handy because we can talk about, is this a family issue, a business issue, an ownership issue? And often there's so much overlap because family members are usually in two to four mountains. They might be a family member who's employed, who may be the CEO. So you got CEO dad who's also on the board and who's also an owner. And so what mountain am I on when I'm speaking? That is a huge issue.
I could see where that really helps create clarity around the conversation too. Is it a family issue? Is it a managerial issue? Is it an ops issue? Is it a shareholder? Yeah. What kind of issue is it? And
Yeah.
then
Well, I know
go
I
from
would
there.
add it's particularly hard for going from G1, generation one to generation two. Because you have the parents and they want to be fair to their children. And so often we think fair is equal. That might be, we try to do that as much as we can in the family, but the business is just a different arena. And what's even more different would be ownership. That's where the real power and the authority and the stewardship is. And so sometimes founders create these a business marriage with their kids. That the kids didn't get to choose. So sometimes we say it's a slippery slope and it's like eloping. We think shareholders, they should be dating and then you get engaged and then you make a decision. So we have a whole process around that.
Cool. So let's talk about succession for a moment. Often top of mind, maybe not top of mind, but in the mind of in a family business scenario. And sometimes it's a bit of an avoided conversation, or it's a scenario where you might see it kicking the can down the road. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Why do you think sometimes it's difficult to start that dialogue? And how do you help families work through that when it's very clear that you've got a CEO that's soon to be retiring, exiting out, and really needs to be embarked on that journey? How does the Dell Family Business Center help people with that?
That's a great question. Often families start too late because they're fearful of getting into some really delicate conversations that they're not sure if they know how to handle appropriately or properly. So, several things we do. One of the things that we do is we have a family business forum. So, we do programs throughout the year, at least four, where we bring in families, multi-generational families who have been successful and will also share their ups and downs of the journey. And often we try to bring in presenters that you'll understand that if they've missed certain points, you're in for real danger. So they can learn both from the presenters and from the families in the group. One of our best clients who came to us when he was in his 40s, and it was really around, hey, I get the business stuff, but I don't get the family stuff. And so what I often say is start early, really start when your kids are in grade school, because it's so important to create important policies like a family employment policy. What are the guidelines between and expectations between family and business? And we would recommend a certain amount of maybe education or a certain amount of outside experience so you know who you are and you can bring something back into the business. But back to the succession. So we know what succession is about ultimately, right? It's about death. Dad or mom or grandpa, someone's going to die. And sometimes family members are attracted into the business because they want to be with family members. And sometimes they haven't even identified who they are and what their mission in life is. Find that a lot. And sometimes they want to live out dad's legacy or mom's legacy and not their own. I'm not sure who they are. So it's confronting death. So what we do, the first thing is we invite the family together for some education. And then we invite them into a process. We call it base camp because the five mountains, that's our process. And it's really around navigating these five mountains to really educate them on the process, on the complexity. And then we have a process that really gives each family member a voice, not in the business, not in shareholdership, but in a family meeting where we can share who we are and what we want and what our concerns and questions and challenges are. And Ed, it's sacred ground. Let me tell you, these meetings really sacred because it's an opportunity to have conversations that often families never have. So the business can actually lead to a healthier family if we approach it in that way. And it can also lead to so much complexity that we want to run away.
You made so many great points just now, and that sounds like an amazing experience. And I'm think reflecting on my own journey and that of others. And you may see this sometimes. I just wanted to get your take on. Sometimes you see maybe a second or third gen that's in place in some form of leadership capacity, but the parental figure's still around, right? They're still coming in. And one questions whether or not that next generation fully gets the chance to lead because there's that crutch that's there. Have you seen that scenario where there's clearly that maybe it's the first gen who just can't seem to find their way all the way to the exit and let the next generation take over?
Again, both end, yes, so much. And that is the key. It's a very delicate dance because we need the founder to prepare themselves or themselves, if it's more than one, to leave. Because it's they're often a primary identity. That's where they find their value, their meaning. Sometimes they don't have hobbies, and sometimes they're fearful, and sometimes their spouse says, "I love you, but not all day long, not just for lunch, or not all." So it's a huge change. And then what we see in the for the rising generation, it's really important that they know themselves. So we do lots of assessments and all kinds of other things, leadership development, but that they're able then to earn trust and make proposals. We often help the rising gen, which we think they do the heavy lifting in succession. It's their future. So we try to gather potential shareholders and help develop them individually and collectively so they can really make proposals. If they can't make a proposal of how they're going to work together as shareholders, which is the most important, right? How can we expect them to lead? And we also know it's really hard for dads, moms, grandparents to mentor family members, all, especially founders. They're so used to being, just do it. I know how to do it. I don't know how to train people. I don't know how to do it. So we come alongside and we try to facilitate that. But yeah, so that's actually two of our, we have five principles for healthy generational transitions. The first is that all family members count. It's family business. So we want to hear and gather all the voices so that we make sure that the family muscle is strong and the family fabric is strong. But then the second one is that the senior generation prepares to leave, right? So two things we think they need to do, Ed. The first is identifying their next chapter. What do I want to do? And sometimes it works that they can work with the next generation. I've seen it work beautifully, and it's worked in my own situation here. I invited our founder to come back after sabbatical. He brings a lot. We yin yang that we're not father daughter, so that's huge. But so those two things. The first is to identify your path, your next chapter, and the second is to identify your number. What is it going to really take for me to be financially secure? Because often most of the wealth is in the business. So if they haven't diversified, so that's what we work with the senior generation to do, and often with spouses, we include spouses whom we call first round draft picks in our projects. We think it's really important. We learned that probably 25 years ago. And then secondly, we work with the rising generation to step up because Ed, it, and you know this, it's really hard to grow up in a family business because you got a lot of family, you're in a microscope, and you're always little Joey or little Sally, you know, who, so you, that's why we think outside experience is so important to really bring stuff back.
Absolutely, absolutely. I wish I knew you 25 years ago when I was going through some of this.
Me
'Cause
too. I, you
you
don't know
all
how often we hear that. If I had a nickel for every time I heard
have
that.
a So we talked a lot about the dynamics of family members in the business. Let's talk for a moment about non-family members. To what extent do you bring them into the conversations, if you will? Because I've heard a lot of times, and I think I've probably seen it through my own experience, because at one point my sister and my dad and I were all together in the business. And we had a very unique dynamic and we could communicate very well because we knew each other so well. But I think sometimes non-family members were like, what's going on? Where? And I missed a chapter in the book somewhere.
Yeah.
So how do you bring some of those non-family executives into the fold, if you will, and be part of the process?
I love that you're asking that question because non-family key team members, employees are so important because they bring objectivity. They often love the family. They want them to succeed. They have a lot at stake as well. But they bring that objectivity and they can often tell the truth about what's going on. Often the family and others, we know what we need to do. But we don't sometimes have the courage, or we have don't have the guidance or the path to get there. So non-family, they're incredible resources, and we do include them in our, like we do a base camp initially, our initial meeting. We don't want to just hear the perspectives of the family. We often encourage them to invite one to three or four others for us to interview so that we understand their perspectives. They're fully in that Blue Mountain. So they don't have the red family lens, the red family, the family piece. We're myopic as a family, and the blue, they bring all that objectivity. The other thing, Ed, is sometimes families choose to have non-families lead the company. We think it's wonderful. We help families do that all the time, and so sometimes it's elevating those who are currently in, or else we do an outside search for others. So we invite the non-family employees also to come to our educational events, our forums. So kudos. I can't tell you how much I appreciate the non-family. And they're often very gracious because they understand, we also help them understand a little bit about family dynamics and around this complexity around the Five Mountains.
It reminds me of a scenario. One of my older brothers was working in a family business and was having a lot of problems with some of the family members. So kind of went to the CEO and said, listen, I'm sorry, I just don't think this is going to work. And the CEO turned around and said, okay, you run the company. So an unexpected turn. But certainly we've seen scenarios where sometimes to maintain that continuity of prosperity, sometimes an outsider is maybe best equipped at that juncture to take the reins, if only for a period of time, and sometimes for a long time,
That's right. Or as
depending.
a bridge. That's right. Sometimes they serve as a bridge from one generation to the other. And then I will just mention there, we also, since I didn't talk about it yet, like boards, we also, that's the Green Mountain, can't be behind me, but when families really get to the place where they need that, they're multi-generational and they really need that strategic oversight and the objectivity and independent directors, not just mom, dad, grandpa, but truly make it an effective, high-performing board. We often serve in that function initially with families, sometimes for a year, sometimes for 5 years. We have long-term engagements usually with our families. But then we also help them to develop a truly independent board when they're ready for that. And before that, often it's an advisory board that we can help them develop as well because families, and I don't know about your family, but they're often underserved because they see advisors as an expense, not an investment. They're used to being DIY people. We can do this. So another point.
That I understand that I see the value of bringing that outside perspective and all the tools that you bring. It seems that you have a playbook for every scenario just about, and that's pretty amazing. Many of our listeners are rising leaders in family businesses. So they're maybe in their 20s, 30s, and they're at that crossroads, as I was at 22. Do I do this? Do I not do this? What would you say to somebody that's a young person that's contemplating a role in the family business and is at that crossroads? How might you guide them, Sally?
Yeah. I also like that question. I think often we find the rising generation to be a little bit more open. And also, they have experienced some of the pain or some of the confusion, I should say. So, one of the first things I encourage is for them to have and understand a spirit of gratefulness and gratitude, because it's their parents or the leading generation. They've never been through this before. They've not been through a transition. They've not been through mentoring their kids in a business environment. So again, we do that holding that container to educate around some of that complexity. But then we work very closely with the rising generation in a number of ways. We can do individual coaching, and a lot of that is around knowing yourself first, gaining that emotional awareness, the EQ, self-regulation, all of that, understanding family patterns, understanding who you are, and then helping them uncover what is it that truly makes their heart sing. Because sometimes they're in a role that really wasn't made for them. Sometimes they've been placed there. But then it is really to help them be all they can be. And that's why we have a staff or a staff of 14 with different capabilities and competencies. So we can do that on a regular basis. We also have peer groups for next generation. So they're invaluable, Ed. I don't know if you were part of one of them, but to hear the stories, to be in an intimate monthly group, to hear under the code of confidentiality, what's been to process real issues about family business and to know, number one, I'm not crazy. And number two, there are helpful pathways forward.
And I've always been involved in different sorts of peer groups and forums, but there's something I'd say distinctly different when you're a multi-gen or a second or a third versus the founder or the startup or the entrepreneur, and it's a different struggle, or it can be, than different sets of issues. You've bought something, or in my case, I bought it, but some people just inherit it, and it's the maybe not the ship you would have built, but the ship before you.
And as they often say, the first generation, they created it. Not many, and entrepreneurs are a rare breed, right? And 90% of most businesses fail. So they take it, and then the next generation really needs to, sometimes people use the word professionalize or just bring a different skill set. So I think also helping those two generations understand that they're not competing. Sometimes they feel like there's a little competition as well.
Oh yeah, there certainly can be.
It's real. It's family business.
There certainly can be. We remarked to this earlier. Sometimes you've got that older generation and they're really struggling to let go and really struggling to entrust the rising generation with the reins. How do you help them work through that? That's saying it's okay to let go. Or there was an advisor to my dad, and he was sitting with me, as though I wasn't there, but I was there in the room, saying some initiative that I wanted to try, he felt it was going to fail. And the advisor was our previous accountant. He said, then let him fail because he's going to learn a lot in the failure. And so they let me go forward with the initiative. But it was, he needed to hear that from the outside. But there was a lot of, I think a lot of times there's a, you see there's that first generation or second floating around the building or the office space or the manufacturing suite, and they just can't quite let go. So how do you work through that?
Well, I'm going to start with sometimes they shouldn't let go. This is going to be the opposite, because sometimes people say they're my son or they're my daughter and they can do it, and they really can't. It's an elevated view. And so that's the one side, and that's part of what we do. We test competencies and fit and all of that. But in the case where, which is probably a little more common, where it's that tangle of not letting go, we work closely with both of them together at really what they want, where their skill sets are. And you probably will understand this, but often it's other stuff underneath some of that. There's sometimes things that we're not talking about. There might be some unresolved or misunderstandings about a variety of things. It can be things in history around personality, around how we operate. So that's why certain assessments like DISC and Myers-Briggs and all of those good things help. But times we encourage or give it as an option, sometimes the next generation does need to leave. because sometimes they hang on and they haven't done their own work in establishing their own competencies outside the business. So we are really strong advocates, and I just worked with a family last week on getting good outside experience. I know family businesses are afraid we're going to lose them. They're going to go somewhere, they're going to love them, they're going to perform. But it's really important for a rising generation to, number one, get that internal authority to know I'm not just in the business because of my last name. I work with too many 50-year-olds that feel that way. And then they need to get that external credibility from everyone else. So it's a huge task. And again, sometimes it's helpful for the leading generation, that mother, that father, grandfather. Sometimes they can be a very valuable board member, sometimes even chair, sometimes not, or again, part-time, full-time. But there's so many different options. So we just say, hey, we'll help you get there.
Cool. That's cool. And I think going back to my scenario, when my father exited, it took him an adjusting period. There were several months where he had to find himself, and then I'll just say he discovered retirement, and then he was off and running. But it took a while for him to connect with all the things that he had wanted to do that he shelved along the way as secondary to the business. And when that was taken away, all those things became possible. Needless to say, in the last 12 years he was with us, were some of his best and happiest times. And he became a great advisor to me across that span too. So it was a nice way to go out. But it took a while to have a
Yeah.
little bit of a framework going into that. Probably would have made the adjustment period a lot easier.
And to normalize it. A lot of our work too is normalizing that, just to know. Kudos to you then, to you and your dad, that you know, there's fits and starts, there's messiness, there's rockiness, and just to know that's part of the journey. Change is just really hard.
And as a second gen, a word a lot of people don't like to talk about is fear. A lot of us have fear of screwing up. Dad laid down this great foundation. I don't want to screw it up. Unfortunately, there was a period of time where I was probably more governed by fear than I'm very risk averse and things of that nature. Not that I'm a huge risk taker, but nonetheless, coming to terms with the fact that some calculated risk is necessary in business, and that living in a state of fear is not a good way to live. Put that to bed some time ago. But I think it's natural sometimes to say, all right, I've got this now and I don't want to mess it up. I better be really careful with this instrument in my hands being the business.
And you are so true. The first generation, there's so risk, that's great. And the next generation is often more calculated and in some ways strategic in their own way. So you have to understand, but it's understanding both, understanding what the business and what the family needs.
So let's talk about the green mountain on the five mountain process. That would be the
Okay.
board.
The board.
So for some family businesses, I imagine the idea of the formulation of a board may sound a little bit intimidating or overly formal. How do you make that concept a little bit more practical and approachable for family businesses?
I'll think of a meeting that we just had yesterday with a family. So often we tell them, we don't often start there, we laid out the framework, but we say that we often function in this function as a board function with you for quite some time. So that is a helpful move. I think the other thing is sometimes they've had really bad experiences with other advisors, or sometimes it's friends that they have chosen to be their advisors. So we often don't start with the board. We often start with that gray mountain, which is the advisory mountain. Do you have the right technical advisors? We're not technical. Do you have the right accountant, attorney, financial planner, banker, therapist? Whoever you need. A family needs a multidisciplinary team who's collaborative and who can work together. So helping them get that clear first. So we often ask the rising gen, we say, so who's your accountant? And they'll say, so and so. Tell us a little bit of them. How old they are? Oh yeah, they're about 72. They lived with my dad forever. So often the next generation needs to select their own, advisors. So we often start with that, making sure that advisory mountain, they're getting really good counsel that understands both generations. And then when we move to the board, this is often where dad or mom, they want to be the chair. And that often isn't the best, hasn't in my experience, because the board really holds. This is how it works, and you know this, but so the gold mountain, right? This is the shareholders. The shareholders, it's their responsibility to elect the board. right? They are the ones that have to speak it with one voice around vision, values, and a whole host of other things. One voice, not three, 20. And so they elect the directors, and then the directors, one of their key responsibilities is to hold the president or the CEO accountable and to select and fire them if need be. And you have dad, let's say, sitting as the chair, and then you have a son or daughter, or niece or nephew sitting as the president. So it's often then not truly an independent board. So how we walk with families through that is we educate them around a board, the values. We often introduce them to other folks that have healthy boards. We also bring people to our forum who talk about their boards. And then we help them with a board prospectus. What is it you need? So we have a whole process around that. And often they gain comfort. It's often a path to get there. And then they can really see the beauties that it brings if they've selected well.
Got it. So when a business does make that successful transition fully from one generation to the next, where the second gen or third is fully running and empowered to lead, what are some of the common themes or indicators that transition has been successful? What do you look for in your work to say, all right, we got this one's on a good path. We got this one going well.
Well, so this touches on our ideal, our sweet spot, who we really love to work with because we see that it has great, great hope and great potential. So I always look for families and particularly leaders who can manage their egos. They're open, they're humble, they want to hear, they're collaborative. They might be a very strong D, right? A very strong, but they want to learn. They're really learners because if you don't have a learning mindset, it's my way or the highway. And when you have some of those traits in the founder or whatever generation that is, that typically runs through the family. Now, there's always a few stinkers in the woodpile, if you will. But we look very closely at that. And then also, if they believe in something outside of themselves, if they have a higher power, if they have faith, it's not just about them and their business, they're generous in spirit. So with those, I find those are the traits and the characteristics. And then obviously a successful business so that
yeah.
they can. But that's what I look for more than anything else.
I often, when I run into a multi-gen business, I look for a lot of things, but the one I think that stands out is, does the rising generation have a vision that's distinct and that's their own, not what their mom or dad did and not let's do a little bit better than last year. That's not a vision, but really what they aim to do with that vehicle they have, which is that business. And I often say, it doesn't even have to be a very good vision. It just has to be yours and you can refine it and it will refine over time. Cause I know that mine did for sure, but having one, I think, is, I don't know, I tend to look for that. I'm not sure if that in your work as well show up, Sally.
Absolutely. And we often say every generation has to reinvent itself. That's just, we can't do the same. So I think that's a really good point. And I know you did that in your business.
Yes.
It's a little harder when you have 3 or 18 or 88, but
With so many economic and generational shifts happening now, how are family businesses evolving in the way that they lead and make decisions? What are you seeing out there right now, Sally?
I am seeing actually more openness, at least in the families that we're working with. They seem to be more open to change and to things like AI and to things like looking around the corner, not just we've always done it this way, so we need to. I've noticed a distinct change. I would say probably since COVID, I think that caused a lot of anxiety and fear. But there's more openness to listen, and there may be a better way. Also learning, there's a lot more available now for family business than there was like when we started 30 years ago. It's not all good. I don't all agree with all of it, but there's just more information out there. I would say one of the things is everybody and their brother sometimes calls themselves a family business advisor. So I would be careful to understand what that truly means because it's a very messy system. So to understand the whole is really important. But I've been encouraged by families and how they're in this day and age, how they're moving.
A previous guest, it was a brother-sister team, and they were already in the business, and their father was in the business, and he passed suddenly. Mm. And they navigated that as well as could be expected, but there was so much unknown, so much questions left unasked, things that they just had to go and figure out, because when their dad passed, a lot of tribal knowledge left with him. And they made it and they're doing well, but they most certainly were not fully ready for that moment to happen. So what are some things that family businesses can do to proactively or preemptively mitigate those types of situations?
One of the first things we ask families when we meet with them is, what would happen if you keel over tonight? We think the crisis plan is so important, and it happens. And so I think that's where we start, and then to start to get their heads thinking that way, because often, especially entrepreneurs, they're invincible. And then that helps you think about the longer term. So once we get a crisis plan, and that's really difficult, as you might know, because you have to make some of those, what happens in the management mountain, like who's in operations, who's going to lead, and then who's going to get the shares, or who's going to have a majority over there. So it's multifaceted. So we have a coordinated crisis plan process around that. Now, there's not much. We tell stories about real families we've worked with and things that have happened, but there's not much that scare tuck. I don't like to use it, but it happens. If we don't start with the crisis plan. So I would encourage, to your point, I would encourage anyone who's listening, next generation, to be asking that question. Not in a thoughtful, generous, caring, compassionate way. I'm just curious. And sometimes it's not good for them to ask mom or dad or grandpa. Sometimes it's better to have an advisor ask that, because sometimes it can come across as either entitlement or disrespectful. So I think that's often it comes better from us or from you.
Very true. Very true.
But often they don't think about it. There's so many of the business is the barking dog. And so they don't think about what happens if I'm not here. And they don't need to think about all of those mountains because they're king. They can make a board decision and change their mind in the shower every 3 minutes, right?
Yeah.
When it's just one. And that's not how it is in the second and preceding often generations.
Yeah, true. So for any listeners who are thinking, for various reasons, we're stuck. So it could be that they're mired in having trouble working through decision-making because there's different family members that are not aligning on decision-making. There's people, maybe the wrong person in the wrong seat because of their last name happens to be the same name on the building. And they've got all of these things that are making them in a state of paralysis of sorts. What's one thing or two things that you might throw out to say, hey, here's one way to get unstuck and get back on track?
One thing I'd like to offer is they're welcome to give me a call or a shout. I'm happy to talk with any family business and see if I can be of some support, whether I send you a resource or invite you to a forum. I would invite any family businesses listening. They could be a guest at one of our educational events. Again, there is a lot of information out there on family business. Some is better than others, but I could send some resources that I, with my years of experience, that I think is really good. So I would be happy to send a few articles or resources out to any listeners.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. And finally, if somebody did want to dive deeper, learn more about you or the work at the Del Valle Family Business Center, what's the best way for them to connect?
They can call me. I don't know. Can I give a phone number on a podcast?
You can give a phone number. It'll be in the show notes too, so you can give it.
Okay. It's 215-723-8413. I'm on LinkedIn. My email is sally@dvfbc.com. I wish our name wasn't so long, Delaware Valley Family Business Center, but we've been branded that way for 38 years. So yeah, and again, I'd be happy to speak with any families. It brings me great joy to work with families just because it's not just impacting one person, but we have the opportunity to impact generations to come and bring health and wholeness. So that's my why, and I love it.
I love it too. That's awesome. Sally, thank you so much for your insight, your clarity and heart and that you bring to this work. It's so clear. It shows the passion that you have for doing and all the families that you've helped navigate the complexities of working and leading together. Again, we've been speaking with Sally Durstein, Managing Partner at the Delaware Valley Family Business Center and a trusted advisor to family enterprises across the nation. And I'm Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Sally, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.com. www.deleonette.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at deleonette.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.